We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Now, it's Chris Harrington on the Grizzlies, Memphis, and more on 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show, presented by Church Health, caring for people all around us. Give today at churchhealth.org.
Chris Harrington joins us now. Chris, what are we listening to?
That is Missed Opportunities by Hall & Oates. Missed Opportunity for the Grizzlies, for the Phoenix Suns. For all of us who could be watching a Grizzlies-Suns Western Conference Finals right now, instead of that mess we saw last night.
Yeah, I'll get to that mess we saw last night, which was indeed that. Before I do, I saw that you have a Sound Bites podcast back with our mutual friend Jennifer Biggs, and you talk about your food experiences during the Grizzlies playoff travels. We've talked to you about that. But then you talk about Barbecue Fest's Liberty Park relocation. And the Daily Memphian did a poll, actually, asking people whether they'd rather be at the fairgrounds where it was this year or go back to the river. And while those of us in sports talk are wary, of course, of arguments about nothing, it's going back to the river, isn't it? Like, that is a poll that we did. That is of no kind. It's already 100% settled. It is going to be by the river, and there's not any particular debate about it, is there?
No. I mean, maybe in a few years, you know, after it's settled in at the new location, people can talk about what they prefer. The thing about it is, and I sort of made talked about this on the pod with Jennifer, is yep. that people have to remember the riverfront redesign was redesigned for the purpose of hosting those festivals.
Right.
If you'd stipulated on the front end the festivals aren't coming back, then you would have a different riverfront design. There were many compromises and alterations and along the way to make the redesign amenable specifically for those two festivals. And so, it'll be back. I do think it's an interesting question, and I'm not trying to start anything because I don't know. Everyone's plan and preference is for it to be back next spring, and that's sort of the idea. But, like, you know, opening a restaurant ends up having a six-month delay over the projected timetable. Like, I just don't know about a riverfront. And so, like, I'll be interested to see if they really get everything ready for it to be back next year. That is everyone's plan. But the riverfront was designed in consultation with Memphis in May, despite all the hand-wringing and histrionics about it. It was designed for the festivals in large part.
Have you been,
otherwise, it'd be a different design.
Have you been down there lately? It is really so. I haven't driven past the river in a long time, and I did the other day.
It is something else.
It's laid out. Well, I mean, it's crushed. There's nothing. It's fences and dirt now. The whole riverfront, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, but the morning that we did that pod, I actually walked along the, I guess, I don't even remember what we call that thing anymore. The river walk, the bluff walk, whatever the thing is along the bluff, you know, the walk, the path. I walked that just to look. It is mostly at this point in the moving around dirt phase.
Right.
There are some trees that have been planted. You can see the thing that is furthest along. If you walk all the way down towards Bill Street, where the Bill Street Landing is, there's they're calling it the Cut Bank Bluff. That's where the sort of winding walkway that they sort of leveled it out to be less steep. That's sort of a main entrance to go from, you know, the city down to the riverfront. I think that's going to be really nice. You can, even in its partially built state, you can tell how. Like,
where does it go? It goes from what to what? And it's supposedly, it makes it more accessible to go to the river. Where is it?
It's right above where Bill Street Landing is.
Okay.
So it's, you know, it's that part of the bluff. There's sort of this winding stone walkway that's being cut into the bluff to make it, less steep, more wheelchair accessible, more engaging, just to make it an easier walk down instead of like, because right now it's like there's a wall that separates the riverfront from downtown, and that wall is the Bluff, right?
Right.
And so one of the biggest things here is not the riverfront, it's not Tomley Park itself, but the connections to Tomley Park, I think, is one of the biggest things happening. And so that, I think, is going to be really nice. The rest of it, who knows? It's all just a bunch of dirt right now.
Right. I do, like you, I'll be interested to see if they're ready to go by this time next year. It seems like a lot needs to be done between now and then. You could have made an argument that the riverfront would be better off if it wasn't planned around festivals, two festivals a year, certainly. In fact, you sort of have made that argument a little bit. But and it's funny. I was actually surprised that our poll was as close as it was, that there really are people who said they'd just as soon be in the fairgrounds. I guess the argument for the fairgrounds is easier to get in and out of, easier to set up, easier, like it's just functionally easier. The argument against is there's no river. Like, right. That's what separates us, right? I mean, the river is what we got.
Well, Memphis May makes a point about, you know, you're closer to restaurants and hotels, right, and whatever. I don't know if that's that big of a deal. I think you're going to the festival, you're going to be at the festivals, right? I don't know how many people are going from there to, like, hang out on Beale Street. I'm sure some people are. Right. But you know what? Like, there's restaurants in Midtown, too. And, like, Cooper Young's a place to hang out, and Overton Square's a place to hang out. So I don't really see that as a difference. There is certainly a hotel difference for people traveling in, I guess. But the fair, I mean, remember Liberty Park now, for years was the fairgrounds. I mean, it was built as fairgrounds to host events, right? And so it's pretty well set up for that. You have obviously points of entry along all sides of it, whereas you don't, you know, you're up against the river downtown. But I do think the river views, and to the degree that you get a breeze off the river, is a nice thing. To me, what it illustrates is that all of the hand-wringing over relocating for a year was just way overblown. And I think that's crystal clear now.
Right.
But, I mean, at the time, people were like, you're killing the festivals by moving them, you know, to the fairgrounds for a year. And that obviously was not the case.
Right. In fact, you had basically, I don't know what it turned out to be, 47% of the people saying keep it here. Which, and by the way, well, I think it was 2011 when it went there on an emergency basis because the river...
Barbecue did. Yeah, the music barbecue. Fest did not. The barbecue did, yeah.
All right. Onward to the NBA. Before I get to last night, one of the things that people have been talking about is these Grizzlies. Now, we already knew where the Grizzlies would be drafting. We now know that they're not going to be drafting, in additionally, a third number one pick. Do you surmise that they will not draft both? They will not have two first-round draft picks on their roster next year?
I do not surmise that. I don't know why everyone takes that as some, like, you know, fate accompli or whatever I'm trying to say. People think of it as a given. Well, you can't have why can't you? I don't understand that. You know, you'll have at least two roster spots, I think, open to you. I think they have drafted well, generally. I think they have shown that they kind of like late first-round picks. They've sought out, like, the last pick 2 years in a row with the Bain. I mean, Desmond Bain was the 30th pick, and Sanchez almost the 30th pick, and they traded for both of those picks. And when you get late first-round picks, you get guys on cost-controlled contracts for 4 years. They're pretty cheap. And if you draft well, you have, you know, guys who can play on cheap deals, and that's pretty good when you're going to be paying John Morant $200 million. It's kind of important. And so, to me, the draft is a way to replenish your depth in a way that can help you afford your big contracts if you draft well. And every once in a while, you may hit big like you did with Desmond Bane. And so I don't think, you know, I think Zach Kleiman has shown he is aggressive around the draft with trades. He's made trades, I think, every year around the draft. And so I'm sure he'll be looking to, like, figure out what he wants to do. And if what he wants to do is not at 22 and 29 and he can move somewhere else to do it, he will. But I think they would be – I would suspect they'd be totally happy to draft players at 22 and 29 and put them on the roster. So I don't see why everyone assumes that, like, you can't – there's no rule, as far as I know, against, like, carrying multiple rookies. They've done it every year.
They also, by the way, have a – now they have Cleveland second. So now they have a third one as well. The argument that people are making, what I have heard, is that at some point you turn a corner and you don't want to add more youth. And how, by the way, do you develop all these young players anyway? If you're feeding Zaire Williams minutes. But the truth of the matter is, what we saw this past year was Zaire Williams you treat one way, Santi Aldama, you treat another way. Like he's getting, he's being developed in the G League. You know, you could do that, right?
Yep. Yeah. The reality is guys are going to cycle out. Like, I mean, I know they talked on the media day about, you know, money's no object and, you know, we can keep whoever we want. And everyone's talking about the importance of keeping it together. The importance of keeping it together means John Morant, Desmond Bane, and Jared Jackson. Like,
right.
That's what that means. It's not keeping all 50-year players together. And so if, like, Kyle Anderson sits elsewhere and, like, Killian Tilly ends up knocking out and, like, Jared Culver off the books, you got three roster spots. Like, it's fine to keep bringing in and developing new talent to work its way up. Like, who knows if Brandon Clark is going to get re-signed after his rookie deal. They got to find the next Brandon Clark and the next Desmond Bane and the next Zaire Williams and the next John Conchar and Xavier Tillman, you know, by the way. And they've shown that they're really good at finding those guys and developing those guys, and they should keep doing it. And so, you know, I think all options are open. One of those options is taking players with all those picks. And I think the second-round pick is – that is low enough. It is the back half of the second round, barely, but it is the back half. And if they take a player with the pick number 47 to keep, that's not like a draft and stash or whatever,
yep.
That player is probably going to be on a two-way contract, not on the main roster.
Yeah, that makes sense. Is it? Do you get the sense, by the way, that when the Grizzlies approach the draft, how much of it is position and how much of it is player? In other words, when they were going up to get Brandon Clark or going up to get or acquiring the pick to get Desmond Bane, obviously they loved the players, right? They saw value in the players. Do you think they were also target positions? And does that matter more as you get more mature as a roster?
I don't see any evidence of them targeting positions relative to sort of team need. I do think they take position in mind when they're considering value of player. I mean, one of the reasons they went after Zaire Williams was because of the position he plays. It's because a big wing who they think can grow as a ball handler,
right.
They think it's a really important thing to have and a hard thing to find. Whereas, you know, a backup center or a backup point guard kind of thing may be easier to just get a hold of in free agency or via trade, whereas a good young wing with size is harder to get. And so I think position factored into that. You know, but I don't see any evidence that they see the draft as a fill a specific positional need in the short term. They see things in that level. Now, I do think you have to have a plan to develop players. And so, you know, at some point, you know, if you're log jammed at one spot and you have openings at another, there's a better path to develop a player. So I don't rule that out as a consideration. And I think you can certainly look at the point guard position in that way. But, you know, they've had opportunities to draft a point guard. They have not done it in the last couple of years.
You tweeted out, you said, I'm sure this has been noted elsewhere, but noticed last night that the four teams left were all top seven defenses on the season. None were even top eight on offense. If Phoenix wins game seven versus Dallas, the final four would be the top four defenses on the season. Where were the Grizzlies?
Seventh, I think. I want to say they were seventh on defense and like fifth or sixth on offense. I mean, the Grizzlies were the only team that had a better balance profile than the Grizzlies was the Phoenix Suns, and which should be the Western Conference Finals right now, I think, if those teams are both fully intact and healthy, but that was not the case. But, yeah, if Phoenix beat Dallas, then the top four defenses in the regular season would be the four teams left right now.
The other thing is that, and Hollinger wrote a piece about this, the threes, like, Boston and Dallas take more threes than anybody. I don't know. Well, what are the lessons to be gleaned from who's succeeded this year?
I mean, I think you got to be a little bit careful with, you know, both what Hollinger's
right.
point and my just tweet about the defense. I
right.
do think defense remains underrated, and to me that's a little bit more of an illustration of that. But I think the real story of these playoffs, unfortunately, it has not been the story, but to me the story is the injuries and the health.
Yep.
I mean, you just look all around and, you know, Golden State might end up in the NBA Finals, so they're going to have played a first-round series against a team missing its two best players. They're going to play a second-round series against a team that didn't have its starting lineup together for a single possession. And then they're going to miss the team that's been the best team in the NBA from start to finish because apparently Chris Paul had a quad injury midway through the series. And, they blew a lead, and now they're playing a four-seed Dallas. They'll probably get to the NBA Finals, and, like, you know, Jimmy Butler will pull his hamstring or something the way it's going.
No, and I mean, yeah, you can see that obviously in Boston right now. It's one of the things that make
it, well, I think if Chris Middleton doesn't get injured, I think right. Milwaukee's playing right now. And then in Boston, you're missing Horford and Smart. And so it's been unfortunate. But, yeah, it's frequently a thing that impacts the playoffs, but I think it's particularly impacted things this year.
It's actually one of the reasons why, although I was bemoaning that the Grizzlies had this opportunity and could have been playing. That was my overwhelming sense last night, is these teams just aren't that good. And the point you made that you never know when your best opportunity is going to come it was glaring last night. On the other hand, you look around, like, you're not the only one. Like, everyone suffered from injuries. The weird thing is Golden State had injuries. They just happened at the right time, right? And so they're now
right.
healthy.
I mean, you know, obviously, as we all know, they lost Gary Payton Jr.
Right, yeah.
But he, or Gary Payton II, but he's their sixth or seventh best player, right? It's not a core. It's not, you know, your one of your top three, four, five best players. And so their top three, four, five guys have been intact throughout the playoffs, just like being one of the older teams. And so, yeah, I mean, the fortune has hit them at the right time.
So in terms of what you saw last night, Luka had 20, 6 of 18, 2 of 10 uncontested shots. And Dallas was 11 for 48 from 3. So that's not going to happen again, I presume. What did you make of what you saw last night?
Yeah, I don't think the rest of the series is going to look like that. Golden State won game one against Memphis and ended up going six games. Dallas lost game one in both of its first two rounds, ended up winning both of those series. I think there's been a little bit of history, I think, of Golden State because their style is so different, like having sort of an advantage at the start of a series as people have to adjust to, like, they're just not used to playing teams that play like that. And so I think Dallas will be better. Now, I don't think I ever made a prediction anywhere here or Twitter or anywhere else, but I was not someone who thought Dallas was I did not favor Dallas to win that series. I think Dallas is not good enough to be in the Western Conference Finals, and they just sort of got there. But that's a good defensive team with a truly great player in Luka, and I think their defense and Luka will both be better as the series goes on, and I think you'll see more competitive games going forward, at least.
Who did you find yourself rooting for in the Miami-Boston series, and who were you rooting for last night?
I was definitely rooting for Dallas last night. I'm fed up with Golden State. I'm done with them. I want them to lose. That was an easy one. And I have no natural allegiance to Dallas whatsoever, but I found myself definitely rooting for Dallas in that series. To my surprise, I found myself rooting for Miami in the Boston series. Yeah. Jimmy Butler didn't have a ring. He's a crazy man, but, man, he steps up when it matters most. I like that guy. I like Bam. Both those franchises have won too much, and so, like, even that out, I'll root for Miami.
And I don't mind Miami taking down Golden State. That'd be okay. All right, well, thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.